Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
It is I, Alejandro. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Open Minds Radio. We have a fabulous show today. Our guest is Lisa Romanek. She is kind of my extraterrestrial UFO Valentine today. And she is the wife of Stan Romanek. However, she has written her own book with her own experiences called On the Other Side of the Bed. And it's kind of like being the spouse of an abductee. And what's interesting is a lot of people have been replying, you know, oh, this is going to be the same thing that Stan wrote, but from, you know, her perspective, so it's just going to be the same old. But it's much, much different because she goes more into what it's like, you know, the emotions you feel, the doubts you feel, you know, is this guy crazy? Do I need to run far away? And, you know, and she's very blunt about it. You know, you'll hear in her interview, and when I've talked to her before, or some of you have probably met her, she tells it straight, you know. She is very bold in being open and honest, and so people find it really refreshing, and she's got a great sense of humor. So I'm excited to read the book because I haven't yet, but everything I'm hearing is that it is fabulous. So we're going to talk to her and only her later on in the show, and it's going to be great. Of course, everything is chaos here at the Open Mind Studios because everyone is frantically preparing for the UFO Congress, and that is exciting. Everyone is getting excited to be there. Lisa Romanek will be there signing books along with her husband. And a lot of the guests that I've had lately are all people who are going to be at the conference or speaking at the conference. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and you still have a chance, you know, to come by and check it out. I'm hearing from people even just a minute ago from someone who's like, I think I'm going to come, you know, I need help finding a place and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, we're already busy, and what do you think I can do for you? No, there's always people. We'll see what we can do. But always those last-minute dudes who are like, you know, now I want to go. So all of you guys who are last-minute and you want to come check it out, it'll be a lot of fun. Come and say hi to Jason and I and Maureen. And some of you, you know, if you've gone on YouTube, you can see Maureen and what she looks like. And if you're into attractive young women, you're going to want to check those videos out, because there's a picture of one in the background in one of the videos, so you'll have to know Maureen's a very pretty girl. And, of course, that gets people excited. Jason also gets people really excited when they see him. So if you want to get excited, no matter what your gender or preference, you know, you're going to want to come to this conference. Otherwise, if they haven't seen that, maybe they've only seen Maureen in our picture that Dale made us from The Simpsons, and they think she's some kind of space being or Barbarella with a laser gun. And I don't know if she's going to break out any sort of costume like that. But if you don't come to the conference, you're not going to find out. So check it out. Go to UFOCongress.com, and you can find out more about the conference. So I won't say much more because, you know, it's coming up. We've talked about it so much. And frankly, we're already tired of it, I think. No, just kidding. We're very excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. Don't forget, too, if you are in the area, you can come on Tuesday to Fort McDowell and watch all day the entries to the EBE Film Festival. So all day you can watch some UFO documentaries and vote and see which one you like best. And the winners will be revealed on Saturday. So at the banquet, that's always a lot of fun for people. And the statues are so cool. Steven Spielberg, you know, that's one thing he's missing out on. He's never won an EBE. I'm sure he'd be a shoo-in if he submitted something, if he promised he'd come to collect the award. But I'm sure he's going to be jealous of any of you filmmakers who do win an EBE. Without further ado, I think we should talk some UFO news, because that is something we live and breathe here, and we always have a lot of fun doing. on a regular basis. And we have our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, here to go through the UFO news of the week. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Mr. Alejandro. I'm
My
glad
pleasure.
To be here.
As always, huh?
Thank you for that introductory speaky about the Congress. I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe it's right around the corner.
I know. It always flies up on you.
Next week, we will be there setting up at this time. So,
right.
Stressed out currently, but excited.
Yep.
All right, guys, let's talk some news. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, February 13th, 2012. Tomorrow's Valentine's Day.
That's right.
Well, a glowing UFO was recorded on video as it hovered over the Thames Estuary in England on Sunday, February 5th. The Daily Mail described that in the video, quote, the mysterious oval aircraft seemed to be suspended in the air, displaying several amber gold lights of varying sizes, end quote. As is the case with many UFO videos, this video is shaky and pixelated, and therefore it's difficult to make out any real detail or determine any movement from the object in question. The witness explained that the camera was handheld while he shot the video, and he was using the camera's full 40x zoom. The witness, YouTube user Space999Dude, uploaded this 53-second video to his YouTube account. The Daily Mail brought attention to a few comments left by skeptical viewers. For example, one viewer asked, "Why stop filming after 53 seconds?" The witness answered this question, explaining that he shot the footage from his car, but had to stop recording because he was parked illegally and had to move his car. Other viewers criticized the witness for not zooming out to, quote, give us some perspective and to give us, quote, something to compare it with. So the witness posted a second, longer video on Wednesday, February 8th. This video includes a zoom out and is longer in duration. It's a little strange that the witness happened to have a longer version of his video that just happened to address two of the main complaints with his first video. But regardless, Space 999 Dude's videos have garnered widespread attention from mainstream media outlets around the world in just a few days. And I know that Lee Spiegel looked into this a bit, and I know Mark D'Antonio from MUFON was contacted, and he looked at the videos too, and concluded that he was 99% sure that the lights in the video are from a ship on the water.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah. Difficult to tell from the video, though. I mean, there's not much to go on. You've got these weird lights that are seem far away, but there is water there, and with water at a distance, it's hard to tell where the horizon is, especially when it's dark like it was in this video.
Right. Yeah, like you said, there's not a lot of information there, so I can't really make it determine either way.
And with photos or video where things are zoomed in or blown up so much where all you're really seeing are pixels,
yeah,
you can't determine anything about the size or the shape of the object.
Yeah, but the Daily Mail and those guys get all – and the Sun have just jump on anything these days.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I was even noticing, I talked with Lee about this the other day, the Daily Mail – and I guess this is the bane of the Huffington Post. I hadn't seen this. They will just repost other people's stories without giving them credit. And they did that recently.
I've noticed that. And I've actually been contacted by one of the witnesses from a couple weeks ago who submitted a photo to us. Or we did a story on them, and they sent us additional details that weren't covered by, I believe it was the Daily Mail. And in fact, they said that their photos of the UFO in question were used without this person's permission.
Hmm.
They were given by somebody else in the Daily Mail, and even though the Daily Mail knew that this person didn't have the rights to allow them to print these photos, they did anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. More and more, even larger news organizations are getting lax on those kind of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we've talked about it before. I mean, it seems more and more mainstream news organizations are relying solely on YouTube as a source.
Yeah.
And while there is credible information on YouTube, it's not sufficient to just post a YouTube video and say use the description from the person and say, here, this is our source.
Right. Because often those YouTube videos too often have little to no information.
Often. Right. Right. You know, talking about the Sun, and I think it was the Sun who started it, and then the Daily Mail and everybody else took it. That one photo, who still has many people believing the photo of the seagull.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a
The seagull
saucer shaped craft.
Taking
it
a
dump. Has an orb exiting it, a smaller orb leaving from the bottom of the craft.
A gray and white seagull shaped object that has a white orb exiting its bottom.
It has a poo shaped orb.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they are clever with their shape, how they describe their shapes of craft.
Yep.
Over in the UK. We've talked about that before.
Right. At least they're getting creative that way.
But I don't think they've actually used the poo shape. But maybe they will in the future. That's a good description.
They're silly.
Well, Alejandro, I think you saw this. Iron Sky is a Finnish sci-fi movie that has been in the works for several years. Production began all the way back in early 2006, but it appears the filmmakers have finally completed production. The main premise of Iron Sky is that Nazis have been on the moon since the end of World War II, and in 2018 they launched an attack against Earth from their lunar base. The official theatrical trailer for the film was just released last week, which provides additional plot details. For example, a female United States president is revealed, and as the Metro explains, quote, "The female president is a clear parody of former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, with the trademark red lipstick and glasses, teamed with a stuffed grizzly bear in the White House." The trailer also reveals that Nazis aren't the only ones with a spaceship. The U.S. apparently has its own spaceship, named the USS George W. Bush. Iron Sky premieres at the Berlin International Film Festival this month, and the movie is scheduled for an April 4th release. I don't know why they're not premiering it at the EBE Film Festival.
That's funny, it's Berlin.
Yeah.
Nazis on the moon! And I think when we talked about it, they had contacted us. Earlier, I don't maybe Maureen will remember, but I think they contacted us to tell us about their movie. And what was funny is that a lot of the acting and everything is really cheesy. Looks almost more like a YouTube video.
Yeah.
And back then, a few years ago, when kind of the news broke and they made some press releases and stuff about their film, you didn't see the fancy CG stuff. So maybe it hadn't been shot by them, but I wonder if that publicity they got was able to help them generate a bunch of money. So they took this kind of fan movie type thing and added all of these cool special effects. Because if you look at their trailer, the special effects look really cool.
Yeah, that film has come a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember we started talking about it. I think it was probably 2 years ago when we were talking about this. And they were supposedly close to being done by at that time. But I think it's become a completely different movie now.
Yeah, it used to be kind of this hot girls in German tight skimpy outfits and a few jokey step things. But now it's expanded into like a full, the whole Sarah Palin thing was new. They didn't have that before. And then all of these special effects. So it's going to be fun to see
the
once
whole,
it comes
the
out.
The whole Nazi girl thing is still what they're pushing with their movie posters. But yeah, you don't get that at all from the trailer that was just released. So. Well, in other news, multiple UFOs caused a mild stir in New Zealand on Saturday night. According to the International Business Times, six bright red lights were observed over the major city of New Plymouth at approximately 9:30 p.m., moving from the east before turning and disappearing in the north. A witness described, quote, "At first, there were three lights traveling in a triangle formation, and then three more followed. But since then, a woman has come forward claiming responsibility for the strange lights in the sky. Sarah Lynham, who got married on Sunday, said that the attendees at her banquet dinner for the bridal party, quote, lit a series of floating lanterns that were sent off into the sky, and she says this occurred around 9:30 p.m. The bride stated, "So it was us, I'm afraid," adding, "It was fairly windy last night, and most of the lanterns took off fairly quickly." So again, Alejandro, our nemesis, the Chinese lantern.
Chinese lanterns!
Why I oughta? Yeah, those things are so much trouble.
Yeah. You know what we need to invent is some sort of Chinese lantern-seeking water balloon that nails those suckers, drenches them, and just makes them plummet right out of the sky. And we know.
Well, you know what? I think if this wouldn't be a problem, I think we just need to make sure everybody has $100,000 camera lenses. Because
right.
With a $100,000 camera lens, you can zoom in on these suckers, and you can see the brand printed right on the side, the little sticker on the bottom.
And we know that because we went out with some friends with a camera that was $100,000.
$100,000.
We thought our stuff was impressive. And, yeah, red light out there. You were able to zoom in and see the balloon as or the Chinese lantern as if it was a couple feet away from you.
Yep.
Because we've launched those things, and, I mean, that thing was clear in the video.
Quite clear.
And you'll get to see these videos eventually, and we'll tell you about it when it comes around. But
yeah,
it's got to be our secret for now.
Yep. And I guess it's not practical for everybody to have $100,000 camera lenses.
No.
I would like one, but
yeah.
It's not going to happen.
If you got one laying around and you want to donate it to us, we'd
be
more
happy
than happy to put it
your
to
donations.
Good use.
Yes, yes. Well, in another movie here to talk about, a sci-fi movie about six astronauts who are the first to travel 3 years to Jupiter's moon Europa is being made. Astronauts in the Europa Report have a mission to explore Europa's subterranean oceans and to prove the existence of extraterrestrial life. Like similar movies have done prior to their release, the filmmakers recently launched a website they hope will serve as a viral marketing tool for the movie. This website, EuropaVenturesLLC.com, is supposed to be the company's website for the fictitious company Europa Ventures LLC, the company funding the mission to Europa in the movie. Content on the site is sparse at the moment, and much of it seems to require a password to access. There is a video on the site, and as FirstShowing.net explains, the video shows the crew, quote, doing normal activities for a bit, then cuts to black with a signal interruption error at the end. The Europa Report is scheduled for a 2013 release. There's very little information about this movie right now, Alejandro, but it seems interesting. You know, it's right in line with a lot of space exploration that's being done now and a lot of the discoveries made about Europa and other moons and other planets, you know, with this greater volume of water than previously thought. And so this movie looks at a fictitious mission going to explore Europa. And from this fake website that's made, it's sort of comes across as it's supposed to be a real website.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't quite tell yet if the film is supposed to be like a found footage film like Apollo 18. But at least the premise of the film sounds interesting, and it's something that I would like to watch.
Well, 2010, if you remember the end of the movie, where they're kind of like, this is ours, everything else in the solar system is yours. The extraterrestrials are telling them that. But it's weird and enigmatic because you can't tell what's going on because they're trying to do like 2001. That next book that Arthur C. Clarke wrote was, or at least the story that was kind of the sequel to that, was kind of what they had done is the aliens took Europa, and the premise was that they created life there. And they wanted humans to stay away from Europa because they were seeding it with life, kind of like they the premise is that that's what they did here on Earth, you know, with the monkey throwing the bones and stuff after they touched. So they did this again on Europa, and this was their experiment. And then they went away, and then humans went to Europa to explore what the aliens did on Europa. And I don't know much about that sequel or that book, but that's kind of the premise of Arthur C. Clarke's story past 2010. So sounds kind of similar, which I always thought would be a great movie, and it's an exciting concept. So hopefully this will be a good movie.
I hope so. I'm always worried when there's little information about a movie
yeah.
and you say, oh, yeah, it's got this nebulous release date sometime next
yeah.
year. So
it reminds me how excited I am for Prometheus. So.
Oh, yes.
I'm getting really excited.
I'm right there with you, buddy. Well, here, speaking of exciting, here is some exciting breaking news that broke late last week.
Nice.
Colin Andrews has been coordinating an investigation for weeks into what he considers to be an extraordinary UFO photograph. The photo was taken by Andrews' friend and rock star Annie Haslam from the English progressive rock band Renaissance. According to Andrews, quote, Haslam took a photograph of her backyard and found that two golden discs appeared in the photo. She did not see these objects when she took the photograph. The original digital photo has been analyzed by a team of researchers assembled by Andrews, including Dr. Bruce McAbee, who has examined hundreds of photographs during his long career. According to Andrews, neither he nor McAbee have ever seen anything quite like this before. The strange objects in the photo are apparently extremely detailed. Additional research, currently underway, will be completed before the photo is revealed to the public, and that unveiling will take place at the beginning of Colin Andrews' presentation on Saturday, February 25th at the International UFO Congress.
Exciting. I didn't know about this piece of news. Actually, this is news to me.
He just told us about it last week. Yeah. So.
And if you're watching the video, you can see the shock and amazement on my face.
You do have genuine shock.
What, is this the camera I should be looking at, or is it that one?
That's up to you, whichever one Maureen puts you on. But
oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's exciting. We'll see what happens. He's got a team of doctors or PhDs and other scientists actively looking into this photo. And apparently there are many tests being done, and they're pretty excited about it.
That sounds really cool. I'm probably not as excited as I should be when I think about it, because being in this field for so long, you get cynical.
I hear you, buddy, and you know I feel the same way, especially when I hear that she didn't see it when she took the picture. Mm. You know, that more times than not is a red flag.
Yeah,
that we're looking at lens flare or some other issue, but
yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, these guys have seen a lot of UFO photographs.
Yeah.
So
something, it's got to be very interesting to get them excited.
And something like lens flare or reflection doesn't always have the extreme detail they're saying that these discs have in this photo.
Well, cool.
So we'll see. Yeah, it'll be exciting and another reason to make it out to the UFO Congress to see Colin Andrews' presentation. So.
Awesome. Wow, this is really cool.
Well, Alejandro, that is it for the news. And remember, guys, like we talked about, the International UFO Congress is next week. The 21st starts the EBE Film Festival, and the conference goes into full swing on the 22nd. So we hope to see as many of you guys there as possible. We'd love to meet you if we haven't met you already. And that is it for the news. Remember to check out all of these stories and so many more at openminds.tv. your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've just been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
Thank you, Jason. This is a time when I like to share some of the stories that I've written for the Huffington Post or from my site, UFODailyNews.com. However, I've been too busy to write anything for either. So I have not been writing. I've been writing for Open Minds magazine. So I've got some cool stories coming out there, including, and I'll kind of plug those stories. You know, I wrote something on the petitions and the history behind the UFO White House petitions that came out. And also I wrote about Lee Spiegel, who is one of the speakers at the conference, and his history. And he provided some great pictures of the UN UFO presentations that he was a part of that we talked to him about on the radio show, and I think there are pictures others haven't seen before. So that's going to be really cool to see in the magazine. And also, part of the disclosure UFO White House petitions story, I talked about this guy named Grant Cameron, who we had on just a couple of weeks ago, who should be out here soon because he's coming to the conference. But I wrote about his history, and I could swear it's just I probably talked to him personally so much about his experiences. I could swear I interviewed him about them, but I was looking through my radio shows and listening to my interviews with him, and I haven't. But the story behind how he got involved with UFO research is really interesting. In 75 through 76, there was a UFO flap, lots of UFOs, seen near Winnipeg in Manitoba, where he's from, and he was a college student. And this was getting in the news, and they were college students who were spending a lot of time outside of class just driving their cars around because they were bored and had nothing to do. So they went down to this town, Carmen, which is about 50 miles away, to go see if they could see some UFOs, and they did. And Grant was just floored, and he kept taking people out there and having sightings, and hundreds of people, thousands of people had sightings out there, and it was in the news for a while. And this lasted for a couple of years. So I wrote in depth about that, how he got started, and then, you know, some of the other amazing stuff that he's done throughout his career. So he's definitely an interesting character, as some of you noted when we interviewed him recently. So that's some of the cool stuff coming up here. And remember, you know, openminds.tv, you have those UFO stories that go up on a daily basis. And also, if you go to the UFO news feed at ufodailynews.com, you'll see my tweets, because I have been tweeting. So I tweet on a regular basis all the UFO stories out there, because it's easy to tweet. But it takes more time to write stories on this stuff. I'll get back to it in next week or this week, but probably not next week, because I'm going to be busy at the UFO Congress. And hopefully you'll be there too. Speaking of the UFO Congress and people that are going to be there, one person that I'm looking very forward to seeing is my dear friend Lisa Romanek. And I am very excited to be speaking to her now. Let's talk to Lisa Romanek. I am very happy to have as my, I guess, pre-Valentine's Day Valentine, Lisa Romanek on the line. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Alejandro.
How are you?
Good.
Good, good. So I'm happy to have just you on. I remember the first time that I did an interview with Stan and you, because I wanted to have you on the interview too. You were really shy about it. But you're not shy at all to talk now.
I'm still shy.
Oh, you're still a little shy about it?
A little bit.
You're
getting better.
Mm-hmm. I mean, back then you would not have even considered getting up in front of a crowd like it is planned for you to do. Coming up here in May at Paula's conference in Texas.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually. I'm really nervous.
Uh-huh.
But when your motto, I mean, my motto's become live without fear, love without limit. So you kind of have to face it, right?
Yeah, cool. Well, and you've got a lot of practice in dealing with fearful things, no doubt.
Yeah.
Has it helped you also? Because now, you know, in fact, the first time that we did an interview with you and Stan, I don't think Stan had done any talks yet, in fact. And now he's done lots of talks all over the place, and he refuses to do anything without you. So you've been able to be there. Has that helped out?
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has that helped you in getting rid of that fear of crowds?
No, not really. I think I've just let Stan do his own thing, but it's getting over the fear with just all the extraterrestrial happenings, you know,
mm-hmm.
that we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to a point where, you know, the UFO sighting is like, yeah, been there, done that. I don't need to see another one.
Right.
You know, it's kind of the same thing. It becomes normal and the fear just kind of goes away.
Mm-hmm. So this is all you, the reason you're speaking for Paula, I think you, she probably would have had you regardless, actually, is your book that just came out. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the book and why you decided it was important to write your book?
Well, my book's called From My Side of the Bed, Pulling Back the Covers on Extraterrestrial Contact, A Spouse's Point of View. And I wrote this book for other people like me who are spouses or in relationships with abductees, contactees.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like if I had a manual, it's like raising children. If you had a manual, you wouldn't goof up. But I don't want anyone else to go through what I went through without knowing my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So the terrifying things that happen won't be as terrifying. They can have a perspective from someone else of how it was dealt with, wrong or right. But I just felt it was very important.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Now, it's exciting for me that you're right. You wrote the book, and I think other people's involved in that. You're not your typical, it's very different. Yeah, I think it brings a lot of credibility to what's happening because you aren't the person who it's happened to. Although it has, you know,
yeah.
down the road, and we'll get into that. but you're not the main focus. You weren't the main focus of the events to begin with. So you're someone who is close to Stan, who has been able to observe this objectively. And plus, you know, you're kind of a normal Stan, I guess. For instance, Travis Walton, you know him very well. He'll be speaking at the Congress. But when people go see him, he's this normal guy, kind of shy, you know, just very soft-spoken, just a realistic, down-to-earth guy. Stan has gotten so good at doing his presentations that, you know, some people think, oh, this is all just a show. But you add kind of like that Travis Walton aspect. You're a very grounded, more shy, down-to-earth person that people can really relate to. And I think getting that perspective, especially being there day by day from the beginning when this stuff started up, your perspective is really important that way.
Yeah. Well, with Stan, I don't think it's, you know, that he's altered, like, comfortable in the fact that, like, a performance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just easy. It's easy to tell your story when it's your truth, you know?
Yeah.
It just comes very easy. When I get on that stage, hopefully, it'll just come out also. But mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just very easy to share the details of the truth.
Mm-hmm. Now, and when I said before, and you had mentioned, you know, things have happened to you, I think that that is one thing that was frustrating when, wasn't it NBC? I can't remember the name of the show. It was like part of Nightline that came out and did that interview with you. And
with Juju?
Juju, that was her name.
Yeah, Prime Time, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of, you know, framed you or introduced you as kind of this wife who believes her husband and has taken his word on faith.
Yeah.
And which I thought was inaccurate and unfortunate, because you're more than someone who just takes it on faith. You're someone who has experienced this stuff herself.
Well, they portrayed me as very naive, very mm-hmm. stupid, and I am not. Right. From the beginning, I questioned every event that happened. I was our researcher, unfortunately. You know, I had to be on the front line of all this stuff and calling MUFON or calling, you know, Nancy and getting their advice. It's like, what do I do with this? They step by step told me how to document it, how to collect the evidence, how to package it. You know, it was very frightening, very stressful, trying to calm Stan down and make sure he was not injured. I mean, there's a lot involved in it. And to be portrayed as the stupid, naive woman who just blindly follows her husband because he says this happened just really upset me. And they changed a lot of what was said and rearranged the words. So.
Yeah, that was really unfortunate that they framed you that way. Because, yeah, it's inaccurate in that, like you said, you've been there during the collection and had to. And by Nancy, you're referring to Nancy Talbot, who is the lead, you know, investigator who is having you collect the evidence to ship off to her.
Yes.
So let's go through that, you know, how this all started and, you know, like you said, how you were skeptical of what might have been happening. And I know Stan himself was that way. I think people, you know, find it hard to believe he was, but I know for a fact, and you know, he was and still is many times. But for you, it started off right when you were still in Nebraska, you and Stan communicating over the internet. Stan goes out to film some video to show you what Denver looks like and gets a strange UFO on one of these films. What did you think the first time you saw that video he showed you?
I was so excited, because the difference between Stan and I is that I was a total believer, you know. I would look for the UFOs in the sky and just, you know, that's what we did as kids in Nebraska. We just catch lightning bugs and look for UFOs.
So was your family like that and your friends? Did you all believed in UFOs and would look for them?
Well, we did it. I mean, not to say they all believed in it, but we did. So, but I had never met anyone who had admitted that they had seen one, because anyone who does fears that everyone else will think they're crazy and nobody wants to deal with it. So when Stan, you know, called me and said, turn on your computer, turn on your web camera, you have to see this. I was like, oh my gosh, almost speechless. And he's like, what do you think it is? And it's like, it's a UFO, Stan. You know, and it's just the drama of his fear and denial towards what he saw for himself and videotaped cracked me up.
Mm-hmm.
He thought I was nuts because I believed, and I thought he was foolish because he didn't.
Oh, that's really funny.
But, you know, that happened in December of 2000. In September of 2001 was his first abduction.
Mm-hmm.
And my excitement was totally gone by then. You know, I was scared for him. We'd seen more than one UFO between then and the abduction. So that's where my fear came in. And his confusion of he just wanted to be crazy. He wanted to be crazy. So somebody give him medicine and it all go away. But none of the doctors would say he was crazy. So
none of them. Please, you got to tell me I'm crazy.
Yeah. And then 2002, in November, by then we were married, and his second abduction. And that's when it actually got brought to my house, to my life, you know, where he wasn't in Denver and I wasn't in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, what do I do with him? I can't, you know, I was freaking out. He was hurt. He was scared. He was freezing. And, you know, I just had to call our friend, well, Nancy and MUFON investigator and say, what do I do? There's like this flattened circle in our yard. Stan had this stuff in his hand. It's like flaky metal stuff. What do I do?
Right.
And inside myself, you know, during the freak out is like, okay, get a hold of yourself. You know, you work with the elderly, you work with people who die every day. You can deal with this. So it's like, he had to calm down, took pictures, wrote everything he could remember down in the moment, videotape, you know, recorded everything, checked him head to toe for injuries, just all that stuff. And then the next day we had to collect the soil samples and package everything. It was wild.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's that?
I said, I didn't sign on for this, you know, for that job, but.
Right. Getting back to the original, I think that was interesting. You said that when you saw the video, you immediately went to, hey, man, that's a UFO. But Stan didn't feel that way. How did he feel? Are you saying he wasn't sure what the heck that was?
I think he knew what it was, but mm-hmm. he tried to rationalize it as anything else, because he was, like you said, he was such a skeptic that he was almost a violent, angry skeptic. It's like, you people are nuts. Anybody who believes in this stuff is crazy. You know, his best friend and his sister. You know, he's just like, keep that junk away from me. I want nothing to do with you two. You know, that's just how he was. And when it happened to him, you know, he couldn't deny it for much longer.
Right. So that's kind of an interesting how that went down at the beginning. Now, mm-hmm. did you have any, I guess, since you already kind of believed in the whole thing, did you have any, you know, skepticism? Did you think, did you know him well enough at that point? Or were you kind of thinking, who is this guy? Or what have I gotten myself into at all?
But actually, one of my first chapters in my book is called Weirdos You Meet on the Internet. as the events kept happening, you know, more UFO sightings, more, you know, things sort of strange. He was affecting electrical things, the birds. It was like, is this guy nuts? Maybe this isn't a good plan, you know. But me questioning it didn't make it so. I just had to accept that it was happening. There is no way to prove it wasn't. You know, the MUFON investigators were working with them. And I don't know.
So you thought, yeah, you did have your doubts here and there.
Yes. I mean, I tell people, Stan questions everything, what he used to. Now he's more accepting, but I still question everything that happens. It's like the power goes out. Was there a reason for it? Where is my husband? He's not in the house. The door's locked. He's outside again. You know, it's that mental processing of why in the rational reasoning for it. And then trying to figure out, okay, Stan's missing. The doors are locked and he's outside. So why is the power off? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So all the little events, it's like, boo, the alien in the window. 3 months of trying to catch this kid. And at that time, before we looked at the video, we thought it was a kid. You know, honestly, we tried to catch this kid all the time. All I want to do is confront the parents and say, you're a little pervert. Won't stay away from my girl. You know,
mm-hmm. And to catch people up, what you're talking about, and is to get into one of the more controversial events and pieces of Stan's experience is that, right, Stan, and you felt that there was some kid peeking in on your girls, and that's when Stan caught the video, which went all over the internet and got on the news, and which is what spawned, you know, that primetime interview and everything is this video and picture of an alien in a window, which Stan had gotten, and like you said, you thought those were originally that was a kid looking in, and then you found out something different.
Yeah. And, you know, I say it went on for 3 months, which it did, but it wasn't like an every night occurrence. It mm-hmm. was every week, every third week, you know, it was happening, but not like every day.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he just put the camera up and like, see what happened. I mean, mm-hmm. we tried everything else. We'd both run out separate doors and nothing would be there.
And then to go back a little bit, just to kind of follow the timeline, just to see kind of how your feelings and views have evolved while things were happening. When Stan had his first abduction, you still were not living together, correct? You were in Nebraska and he was in Colorado?
Correct.
So then when you got that material, when he sent you the pictures of his scoop marks and this other, and he told you about how strange this was, how did you feel about that? I mean, was that, were you accepting of what happened to him quickly? Did you immediately move to fearful, or did here again, did you say, is this guy trying to pull one over on me, or how did you feel at that point?
I didn't doubt that something had happened, but what happened was he called me and he's like, I had the strangest dream. It's like, okay, what was it? He's like, I'm not going to tell you. But mm-hmm. he says, I have these marks on my back and my wrist. And he said, like, they're almost healed, but they're fresh. It's like, okay, maybe go in and strip your bed. Maybe you have a spider in your bed. Maybe that's what happened. A spider bit you. So, again, I was trying to rationalize what was happening because my mind couldn't go to aliens and abducted Stan. You know, I just couldn't go there on my own. And then he called me and says, okay, I got to tell you this dream. It's so crazy. It's like, okay. And he told me about the three things that come to the door. And the fact that they knocked makes you think, okay, is that a screening memory? You know, why would they knock? And then the fact that the woman obviously had breath, which stuck out in Stan's mind. It's like, okay, since when do extraterrestrial have breath? You know, it's all these things that you question. It's like, what the heck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but that's what he remembered. And whether that's what they wanted him to see, I don't know. Because his sister and him shared an apartment. And his sister had opened the door. And she remembers seeing three people in pinstripe business suits. So if her mind is seeing one thing and his is seeing another, what the heck was there?
Yeah, and to catch people up, I mean, what he described was waking up, hearing a knocking in the middle of the night, going and seeing his sister, opening the door, who he was living at or with in an apartment. And she had opened the door, and there were three beings standing there, two males and one female, and he knew one was female because it had breasts. And like you said, later on, his sister remembered three people in pinstripe suits. Then Stan, these things came over and grabbed him. He struggled with them. They took him out to the balcony. He was about to throw one off the balcony when that's about all he remembered of that interaction there. So
yeah, on the balcony. And then he woke up in a room stuck to a wall and he couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
She gave him all these messages, the female did. So, I mean, I think it's just, especially for people who haven't been through this, it's very hard for people to understand that, number one, that it's possible. Number two, that it really does happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've all been there at one point in our lives also.
So, and you were already familiar with the alien abduction phenomena at this point, is that correct?
No.
Oh, not at all.
No. I believed in UFOs and I believed that the extraterrestrials existed, but I knew nothing about them taking people. I mean, I'd seen Fire in the Sky, but, you know, it was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know Travis. It's not an accurate depiction of his story, but it was a movie.
Right.
So, I mean, I was really afraid for him after that because, you know, what the heck is going on?
Now, at this point, a lot of people, a lot of spouses, when it comes to abduction, will not go past this point right here. Their significant other, their wife or husband will tell them, hey, I was abducted. I had these weird experiences. The spouse will then often say it was probably a dream and continue to say that until at one point they'll say, look, just don't bring it up anymore. I don't want to hear about it. And that happens a lot, unfortunately. I've ran into that a lot several times where a spouse has said, I can't talk to you much about it. You can't call my house because, you know, my spouse doesn't want me talking to anybody about this and doesn't believe it's going on. Can you sympathize with those spouses? I mean, it is pretty crazy stuff. Or how do you feel? Do you feel like this book possibly helps those fearful spouses?
I put it out there when I wrote this book that if I helped one person overcome the fear and the anger and the frustration that comes with this stuff, then I did what I set out to accomplish. I hope to impact a whole lot more people because people in this situation are more likely, unfortunately, to end up divorced and hating each other, not just divorced and moving on their way, because the spouse not having the experiences thinks their spouse is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They're angry. They're frustrated. Why would you bring this into our life? Why did you destroy our marriage? Why did you? And there's a lot of that. I'm guilty of it. I've done it. I mean, I can't say I'm a saint, knew what I was doing. It's just the anger and the frustration and everything is so overwhelming that, yeah, it leads to a lot of anger and frustration and it just keeps building.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope that my book will help. If nothing else, show them what not to do.
Mm. Yeah. And at this point then, you got married soon after this first or our first couple. He actually had a couple of abductions earlier on, and it was soon after that, correct, that you got married?
His abduction was in September. We were married the following July.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you still almost, went on, you went on with it. Was that when you moved? He moved to Nebraska.
Yes, he moved to Nebraska. Yeah.
And
I. Mm-hmm. I had gotten an email from this, I don't know who, what, I don't even care, but Concerned Informer is what he calls himself. And at the time, it made me more afraid that I was getting validation that Stan was in danger. And later on, we figured out that it's someone who was assigned to us way back to watch over Stan, make sure he wasn't, you know, hurt. I don't know how to explain it. Just someone who monitored him.
Mm-hmm. That's so who this concerned informer was?
Yeah, concerned informer. Yeah.
Okay. So you got an email early on, and what did this email say?
I got it in June of 2002, so like just a little over a month before we got married. And it just said that, you know, this is regarding Stan Romanek. I'm sure it's hard for you to accept, but this is all real. It's important for you, basically it's just important for me to get Stan out of Colorado because he was working very hard to keep my location a secret. You know, don't take these warnings as a hoax. They are not. They're very serious. So I was determined that we were getting married. And as soon as we did, he was, you know, going to be tucked away safely in this small little town in Nebraska.
Right. And you were hoping then at this point that it would be over for him.
Yes. I had convinced myself that if I got him out of Denver, the people who were making the threats to kill him or harm him, the extraterrestrials who were taking him, wouldn't find him.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of naive. I understand that. But I was convinced that it would all stop and we could be normal and we could be a happy family. And it wasn't the case.
Right. Unfortunately, yeah. And did you feel that, at what point did you feel this was certainly an extraterrestrial situation?
Well, Stan had gone through the regression with Deborah Lindemann.
Mm-hmm.
And if ever we can get them on DVD and get Stan to allow us to do that, people who watch it will be in the same position I was, just in tears, watching him relive every detail of what happened. And it's like, okay, there is no way this was a dream. There's no way Stan could make this up. It was just details of smell, sight, things that there's no way he could know that he was writing the equation. You know, it's like Stan's smart, but he doesn't understand things like that. So it had to come from somewhere. So I, you know, more and more I started believing that this was all real.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what's difficult. At least, you know, I have a hard time with it. Not that I get upset or anything. I just, when people ask me about his case or are skeptical, it's difficult that you can't show them everything you've seen. And like you said, this regression is pretty shocking when you see it, everything that happens, and then when he writes the equations and everything. And really, he doesn't like people to see it because he's embarrassed, right, because he got emotional in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, just reliving the fear and the pain, because some of the things that were done to him during the many abductions was very painful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they say, you know, they try to alleviate the memory for that reason. They don't want us to remember the pain associated with it. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
So then from that point, so you've seen all this, you see what's going on. He moves out to Nebraska with you after you get married, and hoping that things would calm down and things wouldn't continue. However, they did continue. How long after he moved to Nebraska did events then start to take place?
The following month, we started seeing the orbs. I think it was a month later.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first. I mean, after that, you know, he had seen like three orbs, like right there in our yard. No doubt that there was something very unnatural about them.
Mm-hmm.
He got really afraid, so we moved. And that became our new thing, to move at least once a year. And then 6 months after he moved to Nebraska, it was his second abduction. So
it didn't take long. And this must have been another, you know, important experience for you, because sure, it's one thing to have this guy telling you over the internet this stuff is happening to him, but it's another to then have him move in with you and then this stuff happening much closer to home, and namely in your yard and in your home. How was that for you? That must have been a new sort of experience of probably fear.
Well, that's it. Before, I was afraid of poor Stan. After the second abduction, I became afraid for my children, myself, Stan. I mean, it was terrifying. It just was.
Right. And then on top of that, really, it was in Nebraska where, you know, you had gotten that email, but the human interaction and the human events with people, some sort of people messing with you all, ramped up.
Yep. And it started because, you know, everywhere we'd go, we'd see, like, black vehicles that were following us. You know, we'd turn here, turn there, just to see if they would follow us, and they would.
Mm-hmm.
But we started telling ourselves, okay, we're being paranoid. This can't be happening. Why would it be? The guy said we were safe in Nebraska. They kept, you know. And then we'd moved again, and we're in three different homes in Nebraska before we moved to Colorado Springs. And it was just Mother's Day before we left, so May, June, 2 months before we actually moved. We, you know, got this letter in the mail, and it was after Stan had talked to the lady. I don't know, so much to talk about on the show in an hour.
Right.
But this woman put something in our mailbox. And my daughter, April, because Stan was being a chicken and thought, oh, my gosh, it's anthrax. And I was like, I don't care. I'm not going out there. She might come back. My daughter, April, went out and got it. And it just said Stan and Lisa on the envelope. I opened it, and it says, good luck on your move to Colorado. And remember, we will be watching. And I was terrified. It's like, it was a validation that our paranoia wasn't paranoia. We really were seeing that these people were following us.
Right.
So, and after I moved to Colorado Springs, 2 months later, our second week in our house there, we had a break-in.
Mm-hmm.
And all they wanted was a UFO file.
One of many break-ins in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, that was the first one, 2 weeks after we moved in. And my children were home. Dan had come to get me from work, so it was pretty upsetting.
And then prior to that, while you were still in Nebraska, it wasn't a break-in, but, well, this is where he got the first alien video, or both of them.
No.
Just the first one.
Yeah, just Boo was in Nebraska.
So
Grandpa was in Colorado Springs.
Got the first alien video. Then some people came to the house and took some siding off the house that had gotten apparently melted by some sort of beam of light that came from the sky. And they said they did it for the owner, but the owner didn't know anything about these guys removing and replacing the siding. And they only took that section. So that's pretty freaky. How were you? Because what I'm really trying to paint a picture of right now is kind of your feelings and how it was affecting you and the emotions that you were having through all of this to come to, you know, where you are now, and all of which I'm sure is reflected in the book. But
it's definitely in the book, and there is no holds barred, and it's very honest and shocking to some people. And they're like, I can't believe you put such personal information in this book. It's like, it's important. It's just important.
Well, the more bold, I think typically the more bold someone is in their writing or sharing, First of all, it's more helpful because it's more information that's being transferred, and people can understand what you went through more. Because otherwise, if you're not going to be bold about it, you know, it's not always as worth it. And so that's great that you are so bold. And it gives more of an insight into who you are, I think, by doing that. And at this point, you were probably a mixture of fear, but probably pretty pissed off, huh?
Oh, I was very pissed off, especially when my son was taken.
Yeah.
You know, it was the following January. You know, Jake had writing on his wall. So I was going through a gamut of emotions of fear, frustration, anger, you know, just let it stop, you know. So the bargaining, and in my book, I talk about the 5 steps of coping with all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we ought to talk about that a bit, because that is not a story you guys have shared that often. In fact, you didn't share it at all at the beginning, understandably, which was your young son, while you were in Nebraska, had you woke up and he had written some strange symbols. These symbols were the physics equations that Stan had written. And your son remembered, what was it, the hamburger came in and stole his Mountain Dew?
Yeah, the burglars came in to steal his Mountain Dew. Kid didn't have Mountain Dew, trust me.
Right, and that's all he remembered.
But yes, exactly. Later, he admitted that he knew it was an alien. That's what he called it, aliens.
Alien.
But he was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no way my kid could write Bessel functions of any sort on his wall. You know, and
right.
I know that they're called that because Claude Swanson told me so.
How did you cope? I mean, all of this is overwhelming. It's crazy. Here you are, some girl from, as Nancy once put it, the wilds of Nebraska, and you marry this guy, and all of this stuff. At this point, you're convinced it's extraterrestrial. So you have these extraterrestrials visiting, taking your husband. You have humans. And obviously, these guys aren't schmucks. I mean, these aren't some goofballs down the street playing tricks. These are well-organized people who come in and replace your sighting. And, you know, you have a video, and they're dressed, you know, T-shirt and shorts, but not like ratty T-shirts. They're professional, clean T-shirt and shorts. They look like professional guys who know what they're doing. Come in and change the siding and leave. They have a truck that isn't beat up. It's a nice little truck with a sign on the side. The sign turns out to be fake. The company doesn't exist. I mean, well-organized effort by some people with resources somehow involved in messing with you. That's overwhelming. How did you cope with all of this?
You're going to think it's really funny, but in light of all the stuff that I'm dealing with in my personal life, I would go to work to escape all the scary craziness. Problem is, I worked in an Alzheimer's facility. So I dealt with, you know, dementia patients all day long,
right,
which I loved. You know, every minute of every day, I was happy as long as I was at work, and dealing with their problems were normal to me. Dealing with what was going on at home was not. So I bounced it out with that, you know, dealing with something I knew and understood, which was the Alzheimer's and dementia patients. And then to come home to Stan and the kids and deal with this crazy stuff, the stuff that made no sense to me, that's how I bounced it. And eventually I started getting past the anger and the frustration and started using the humor to get us all through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm funny. You know that.
Yeah, that's interesting that what you said there, too, is because that's something I hadn't realized is, or at least thought about as far as your experience, in that you have this wild, people say they have a crazy home life, you know, and they're talking about goofball kids doing silly stuff. You've got something way beyond that. So you've got this stuff going on in your home life, and then in your daytime, your relief is working with Alzheimer's patients with dementia. And Wow. I mean, that's just amazing.
Which is very stressful in itself, but
right.
compared to the home situations and just the weirdness of normal, you know, home life, that was, you know, the Alzheimer's patients were more normal than the strange stuff being brought into my home all the time. You know, mm-hmm. the beings coming in and the strangers in my yard playing, you know, walking around the crop circle thing. And it was terrifying.
Were you able to find some sort of outlet as far as people you could talk to besides staying in Nebraska? I know in Colorado you began to amass, you know, this large amount of friends who can be there to love you guys and support you all. But in Nebraska, did you have that?
No, not really. I had a friend, her name was Jen, and she's been my best friend for 12 years. And she didn't exactly believe that it was happening, but she supported me regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant a lot that she wouldn't just bail on me like everyone else had, you know?
Right.
She stuck with it. And it's like, I don't know if I believe, but I'm here for you if you need to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But she was the only one I had.
Yeah. Eventually, it seems like it did get easier for you. Is that true? I mean, at this point, it's probably not completely easy to deal with, but much more so than it was back then, I would imagine.
Dealing with it now?
Yeah.
Piece of cake now.
Right.
I figured this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. How long did
I'm
it get you?
I'm not afraid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What was your question?
Oh, go ahead. You said you're not afraid anymore.
Yeah, after, and you're going to have to probably tell this story too, but after they fixed Stan's leg, when we, you know,
uh-huh.
he had fallen off the ladder and hurt his leg and he's supposed to go for surgery. And the night before his surgery, he was freaking out all night, like just worried and wanting to pray and all this stuff. And I was like, it'll be fine. And 3 o'clock in the morning, I can't find him anywhere. And after his leg was fixed, he had 5 holes down the back of his leg. All the bruising was gone. All the swelling was gone. And he could move it without pain. I decided then, if they can fix him and relieve his pain, they've never hurt him purposely, but they wanted him to remember, obviously. So why are we so afraid of them?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's when my fear really started to go away.
Ah, interesting. So it took that long, which is interesting because we'll get into this now, which is I'll give some history on the story you just told, which was Stan fell off a ladder. He hurt his leg. You'll have to tell us how. But it was damaged to the point where he had to wear a brace to walk. And the day before surgery, like you just described, he was taken apparently in the middle of the night. The next day he could walk again and there were these marks on the side of his leg. And I remember for me, cause you know, we went out and there was a lot of stuff for us to investigate.
Yeah.
There was a circle in the yard. His brace had melted and was on the side of the house. And I remember calling you
mm-hmm.
and asking, cause Stan kept saying, this was the brace I had. This was the brace I had. And I had never seen the brace and he said it was a full leg brace. And I didn't believe him because the plastic, there was so little left. There was a little metal bar and all this molten plastic. I thought it had to be a tiny brace that just goes over the knee. But you verified, no, that was a full leg brace that he had.
Yeah.
That was destroyed somehow.
And Rick was also there to help validate it, too, because we'd just gone fishing the weekend before.
Right.
It went from the thigh to his ankle, and it had the little, like, knob at the knee that you
right.
could adjust the bend. You know, to where it was comfortable and keep it, you know, still.
Yeah, and it wasn't that I thought he was lying. I just thought maybe he wasn't describing it accurately to me.
Well, so, Stan has a way of doing that with his comments sometimes. He says, I got a buttload of them. It's like, how much is a buttload? You
right.
know, so you don't know exactly. It's like, okay, specify how big.
Yeah. A buttload, duh. That's funny. But it's interesting you say that that was a point for you, because it's at knowing you very well at that time, you know, it's hard for us from the outside to see, you know, exactly how you're feeling. And it's interesting that that event did have that effect on you, because I remember the first time I came out there to investigate an abduction experience. And at that point, you were having to collect the data all by yourself. From Nancy's instructions, which, of course, you're traumatized from what just happened. And what was interesting to me is that you are a funny, you know, happy person, both of you guys. But when I got there, when that first abduction had happened, I could see, you know, as they say, you know, the tension in the air was palpable, which it was. And the fear. And I just, it was for me an experience to see what an effect these events were having on you, because you and Stan were obviously afraid and highly, highly stressed. Stan was doing kind of erratic things, being a bit of a scatterbrain, and you were really, he was annoying you in everything that he did. So you were overly annoyed by him, and then of course with him doing weird things making you even more mad, it was just I could see that there was some obvious, not that at this point I doubted anything, but that there was obviously a high amount of trauma that you all were feeling from these experiences.
At the same time, total relief that you were there and you had the phone and the phone number to deal with it. You know, it's like, thank goodness, it's your turn. You do it, you do it. You know, it was just awesome to just stand back and not have to do it.
Yeah.
Not take the chance on not doing it correctly. And it was, I mean, how many people can say that because I collected that evidence, I didn't do something to it. And I didn't want that to be in question, but I had no choice. I had to do it. I had to collect it. Dr. Jack Cash from the University of Nebraska came to our house, and I taught him to take core samples with an apple core from Pampered Chef. He thought it was awesome.
Well, that was funny. You were very good at it. I remember when we're figuring out, how are we going to mark all of the places in the yard where Stan's brace had, and you're like, well, I have some skewers and some stickies. So he used skewers and stickies.
They worked great.
It was perfect. Yeah, it worked wonderfully.
It's like the mom thing kicks in. It's like, everything's safe in zipper bags. Not true. Use glass only, people. You know, it just, you start processing. What do I have in my kitchens? And I know we'll take a clean sample deep into the soil. Apple core, good plan. You know, so it's like the mom thing kicks in.
Right. See, and what's interesting also about you saying that you had this fear until the leg brace incident, that wasn't until, what, 2005? Or 6?
2006.
So that's a good three or four years that you were living with this high fear and tenseness.
Yeah. There was never a dull moment, because if it wasn't the UFO sightings, it wasn't an abduction, then it was paranormal activity going on in my house. Things flying. My girls, well, not just my girls, but mostly my girls were seeing the shadow people, you know, so there was a lot going on. I was terrified that they were taking my girls. You know, it was a different fear. But still there. In the beginning, I would sit there and I'd make sure none of my kids were missing. Stan wasn't missing. I'd spend hours at night, like, watching over everyone, not getting any sleep, going to work, coming home, and starting the whole process again.
Yeah.
Insane.
Well, your children's experiences, too. I'll kind of summarize them, because we're actually starting to run out of time. But Jake seemed to be... He was younger at the time, like you said, eight years old when that the burglar experience happened. Now he's a teenager. He always seemed a little bit more accepting of everything. However, the girls even though they saw the paranormal experience, they didn't really want to validate Stan's experiences, it seems. They were upset about it. But then eventually, now that they're in their younger 20s, have come to be more accepting.
But exactly. But there's a reason for it. They can't get to the point of coping with it, because admitting that it's real brings into that, you know, their consciousness that it is real. They did experience this stuff, and that's even more terrifying to them.
Right.
But what I've come to figure out are there are five steps of coping, and it's just like dealing with, you know, a serious life-threatening disease or even death. There are steps that they go through: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. But getting to the acceptance means you have to actually, you know, believe and experience them. And my girls weren't able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, if I don't say it's real, then it won't be real. You know, Nikki moved out as soon as she could because she couldn't handle being afraid all the time. April, she puts on a good front and likes to be Stan's biggest skeptic, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they really can get back and forth at each other. It's like, well, this happened. Prove it. Well, I can't. Exactly, because they're not real. You know, so it's interesting.
But, I mean, she, at this point, does believe that something has happened. And I think at this point she's even believed there's an extraterrestrial component. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now that they're 23, Jake is 18 now. They're very much aware. They've read my book. Well, Nikki has. And all she said to me was, I'm glad you didn't tell people that I said it was okay, or that I think it's okay that they take me, or that this happened. You know, so she wanted to make sure that that was clear. If it did happen, she wasn't okay with it.
Right. And now,
they all are.
So, and that's in your book, the event that happened with Nikki.
Yes. Yep.
Or April.
Nikki. Well, there's many events that have happened, but.
Okay.
Yeah. Read the book.
They're twins, so usually I get them straight. It's rare that I get them mixed up, and especially if I'm around them, I don't get them mixed up. But sometimes, I guess, what happened to who, once in a while I get mixed up, but their personalities are so different that helps to keep it straight.
Yeah. Well, there's even things that you don't know about yet.
Right, I'm sure.
I mean, and you were our investigator for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still we sit down and have a conversation. It's like, why didn't I know that?
Yeah.
It's like, because Stan's the one who talks. I didn't.
Right.
You know, so then now that I can actually bring my stories forward and put a little different light on it. It's like, yeah, Stan says it was this way, but that's his perception of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I remember it being. So.
Yeah. So it's got to, how does it feel now to have this book out? It hasn't been out very long, right?
I think it was January 8th. It came out and it's very exciting. And I have been contacted by a lot of people already saying that, thank you for writing it. It's helped a lot. Thank you for your honesty. So,
right.
Yeah.
So how many, you haven't been able to get a whole lot of feedback yet, I would imagine.
I have Facebook.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of friends on there. So, you know, the ones of them that have read it, which, and the fascinating thing, 50-50, you know, half men and half women are contacting me saying, oh my gosh, what an amazing book. Thank you. I learned so much. It's good. You know, it's like validation for Stan's story messages that these things happen, plus a whole lot more details and a whole lot more emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think it's fun because, of course, here we don't have a lot of time to get into the story, so I'm giving these stories in a thumbnail. But you're always the one who is able to tell us what happens more thoroughly So it takes some time for you to go through the whole story of and events, which is good because we know everything that happened. But of course, more humorous because you bring in your perspective about, you know, what had happened. And you may, you know, poke fun at Stan or yourself or anybody involved along the way, which is fun. So you've always been the record keeper, and I'm really excited to read the book because, and I have been excited for it to come out because I read an early version of it, and that was a lot of fun.
Oh, it's nothing like that now.
Well, I hope it is at least a little bit like that because that was really good.
Well, it's still in my voice, but it's not Stan's story. It's very much my story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if you want to hear more, come to Texas, Glen Rose, Texas.
Well, and you'll be at the UFO Congress in a couple of weeks, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yay! It's not a couple. It's a week from Tuesday we are going to be there.
Oh, my gosh. That's right.
I know.
It's coming up so fast.
Yep.
So in about a week, then, you'll be in Scottsdale at the UFO Congress talking about this and selling your books, or not talking about it, but you'll be at a table selling your books and talking to anybody who comes by.
Yep, that's right.
And then in May, you'll be at the Women's UFO Congress conference in Texas.
Yep, in Glen Rose, Texas, May 18th, 19th, and 20th. So go to www.starworksusa.com and register today.
And this will be your first speaking where you're going to be up there. It's all you. It's the Lisa Romanek show.
I know. Stan will have to sit in the audience and probably make comments.
And pipe in. He probably won't, though.
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah, because that's one thing. If anybody has seen Stan, you've probably seen Lisa pipe in here and there to correct him.
Well, sometimes I have to give him that right information because it gets, you know, the one time is Saddam Hussein, and it was, you know, he was saying Osama bin Laden. I said, Saddam Hussein. When he talked about around the same date as, you know, when Saddam was captured and everything.
Right.
But he kept saying the wrong thing. It's like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and those details can be important, so it's good that you're there. And I know he doesn't sometimes details will elude him.
Mm-hmm. And he thinks sometimes they're just not as important as I think they are.
Yeah, and it varies to the listener, but sometimes those things are important, so it is good that you're there. I'm always glad you're there when something happens so I can make sure, you know, we get your version and his version to make – and he'll defer to you to say, was it this way or that way?
It's like, ask Lisa, she knows. Mm-hmm. She can tell you better than I can. Like, don't ask me. It's like, what was the date? I'll rattle it off. I know when everything happened.
Well, and it's another piece that lends credibility in that, you know, you're this third party who has been present to be able to validate, you know, when things happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the kids also, because I think... Do you put the kids' experience in your book?
Yes, most of them are in there.
Yeah, because I think that's important, too, because there are other third parties to see their reaction, and especially the girls who are skeptical of everything.
Yeah.
But that's
and even my own, you know, possible abductions are in there.
Mm-hmm. Because, so, unfortunately, weird stuff has happened to you all now.
Yep.
How do you feel about that? I mean, you said Nikki at least had said, you know, she was happy that you didn't say that she was not upset about being taken against her will. How do you feel about that?
I'm okay with it. You know, I mean, not that she was taken, obviously, but her reaction to it.
How do you feel yourself about being manipulated or possibly taken?
Now it doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to happen. I, you know, but I don't lose sleep over it. Mm-hmm. I just can't. There's too many other things to worry about in life besides that. You know, you worry about going out and getting in your car and wrecking it. The possibility that you're going to manifest that and it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I choose to stay on the whole positive end of things. Like, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to think about it. You know, and people may think that's a naive way to go about it, but I don't. I think we create a lot of what we put forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not happy about what's happened in the past. And, like, you know, I had what I call dreams because I have no conscious memories of anything ever happening to me. But I've come back, you know, I have had the injuries that say something has happened. So, and the children, that's a whole nother topic.
Right. That reminds me of something else I wanted to talk about, although I do want to mention people can go to stanromanek.com to see Stan's book and Lisa's book with a really cute cover. But I wanted to... What's that?
I have a website.
Oh, okay. What's yours?
LisaRomanek.com.
Oh, I didn't know that. Nice.
Yeah, go check it out.
I'm going to bring it up right now, LisaRomanek.com. Cool. Look at that, sexy lady. Cool. But one other thing I wanted to talk about, and I just wanted to share with people, even though it's not UFOs, but it is paranormal, is just mention the recent experiences that you and I had regarding our wonderful friend who just recently passed away, Linda Lacey.
Traveled on. To a higher, better place, yeah.
Right. And she had had cancer, and she was struggling for a while. But I know you had your own experience. Don't want to hear about it, but it was very strange for me, and it was a pretty, for me, an incredible thing in that Sunday night I kept thinking about her over and over again, just out of the blue. I think of her once in a while, but this was really strong feeling of connection with her. That night I meditated just to kind of connect with her some more and to send her warm thoughts because I know she was struggling. And I fell asleep, and I woke up, and I still had this really strong thought for her. And I thought, I'm going to call my friend Rick because he – and see if something happened to her. And then Stan called, and he said that she had passed. So it was just a very strange experience for me because I really felt like she had kind of come and said goodbye, and I'm really touched by it. But you also had an experience similar?
Well, yeah, similar. I had gone to bed about 10:30, and I just kept having dreams where Linda had come to me and said, just take care of Rick, help him.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan, when he was going through this therapy for post-traumatic stress from his experiences. So in my dream, I was working with Rick doing this and just, you know, helping him explore the good that, you know, the good times with Linda and all this stuff. And you know, it's like one dream would morph into another dream. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was exhausted. It's like, that's enough. I had to get up out of bed and start my day at 4 o'clock in the morning, knowing that Linda had already passed. Somehow in myself, I knew it had happened.
Hmm.
So my day began that morning at four. And then we talked. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah, it is amazing. It feels like she came to visit us, and I heard that I talked to Rick, and he said at least one of her grandchildren had...
All three of them.
Oh, all three of them said
three
that.
Of them.
She came and said goodbye.
Gave them kisses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing.
And independently, not all at the same time. They're like, yeah, Grandma came and, you know, kissed me and said she loved me.
Wow.
So, amazing. We are so blessed to have been touched by her in life and afterlife.
Right. But, yeah, I wanted to add that story because I think, it's an incredible thing. And just to remember her because she was a wonderful person.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show again. And it's going to be wonderful to see you in a week.
Yay. You're coming where it's warm because it's knee deep in snow here.
Right, and it is nice. It's in the 70s, and it's sunny, and you're going to love it out here.
Yay!
All right, thanks for being my UFO Valentine.
Okay. Thanks for having me as your Valentine.
All right. Good night.
Okay, love you. Bye.
All right. Thank you to Lisa for being on the show. That was a lot of fun to talk to her, and she has a lot to say. And she's really come a long way. She used to be so shy. She couldn't really talk and say much. And, I mean, she has all this energy, and she'd want to correct, you know, any misstatements by Stan on dates and times because he can't remember the details as well as her, she would speak up then. So it's always great to talk to her. And I think anybody who goes to see her talk in Texas, or if you come see her next week at the Congress and talk to her personally, you will see that, you know, if for some reason you're doubtful about the case and you've seen Stan talk or you've read the books, you know, come and talk to her. She's a really down-to-earth, genuine person, and will share her experiences, and I think lends a lot of credibility and a different perspective that maybe you can connect with if you don't already connect with the story. So really great stuff. Thank you so much, Lisa. We're not going to talk to you people again for like 3 weeks. I apologize, but we're going to be so busy with the conference. Like Jason said, in a week from now, we'll be setting it up. 2 weeks after that, we'll be probably dead tired. And not only that, we'll have just wheeled everything back home. I doubt we're going to have everything unpacked that we'll need to do the radio show. So it's going to be 3 weeks till we do another show. So hang tight. Listen to any archives you have not heard yet. We have some great, great people that we've interviewed over the 3 years. I just realized we have 3 years worth of shows in our archive. I started up UFO Think Tank Radio 3 years ago, January 2009. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you in 3 weeks, people. Adios. Cue the close music.